Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I use the Complete Idiot's Guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified. I've always felt that way.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior higher.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
We are living in a critical race theory world, and I am an oppressor. This is Wretched Radio, the critical race theory worldview. It seems to be the most popular, trendy worldview that is making its way through every level of our society. You and I are seeing it everywhere, including inside of Christian organizations. I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers a slew of recent stories, and they should have all had the same headline. This is the result of critical race theory. Don't know if you remember this, but 4 years ago, something like that, when critical race theory was first beginning to show itself in its full form, and in, by the way, not just in its full form, but in better shape than it ever was, because the worldview started out kind of flabby and it wasn't working. It wasn't gaining as much traction as CRT theorists wanted. So what did they do? They refined it. They exercised it. They trimmed off the fat. And now it is a lean, mean, horrible worldview machine. And it has made its way even into the church. I grant you, the Salvation Army has put out a denial statement, and yet it appears that almost everybody is confirming Salvation Army wants white donors to offer sincere apology for their racism. That's from the Gateway Pundit? Yep, that was Gateway Pundit, but I think it was Ben Shapiro's organization that first broke the story. The Salvation Army's Alexandria-based leadership has created an international social justice commission, which has developed and released a resource to educate its white donors, volunteers, and employees. It's called Let's Talk About Racism. That, by the way, is one of the weapons of critical race theory: stories, conversation. You've got to hear the story, because the anecdote, no reason to believe it's not true, supports critical race theory. There's no other explanation for why that happened. It had to be because somebody was an oppressor oppressing the person. And so when you hear enough of those stories, you start to be persuaded. Maybe that is the way our society is structured, that we've got an oppressor and an oppressed people group. Salvation Army apparently thinks so, too. It asserts Gulp Christianity is institutionally racist, calling for white Christians to repent and offer a sincere apology to blacks for being antagonistic to black people or the culture, values, and interests of the black community. That's CRT. Simple as that. That is CRT. What was once an academic theory is now being used as a training manual at the Salvation Army. How long will the Salvation Army stay intact? I would once again ask. I don't know that it's going to be too long. Do you? How can an organization stay together when they have invited something that is divisive by structure and nature? I don't think that it can. I wonder about the Gospel Coalition. When is it going to just go? I looked at the board of directors of the Gospel Coalition, and you have got guys who are against critical race theories, and you've got guys that are to varying degrees for it and very for it. They can't get along. They just can't. Because as critical race theory becomes increasingly aggressive inside of the church, You just can't have people who are opposed to this Marxist ideology coexisting with somebody who does. It doesn't work. And that's intentional, because that's what critical race theory is. Many have come to believe that we live in a post-racial society, but racism is very real for our brothers and sisters who are refused jobs and housing, denied basic rights, and brutalized and oppressed simply because of the color of their skin. That's from a lesson at the Salvation Army. Sad that this needs to be injected, but if there is any sort of oppression, if there are any redlining laws that still exist, I'm not aware of any, but if they're there, would you not join me in decrying them and saying, they got to go? There is not a born-again Christian who would go, yes, let's just keep oppressing people. Let's have laws that make it difficult for those guys to advance. There is not a born-again Christian who feels that way. And if there is, they need to do some repenting. Somebody who is ongoing racist, and I mean racist, not they don't know they're racist, but they are, even though they don't express it. I'm not talking about critical race theory kind of racism. I'm talking about somebody who really does believe that there is a particular people group, their own, that is superior to another people group, not their own. That ongoing sin should be dealt with, just like ongoing adultery, ongoing pornography. This should be church discipline business. That is the attitude of the genuine Christian. And so this lesson from Salvation Army is saying that all of these things still exist. There is an urgent need for Christians to evaluate racist attitudes and practices in light of our faith and to live faithfully in today's world. Guess what? I can live with that sentence. It's the sentence that preceded it that's the problem. Of course we should look inside of ourselves to see if we have any racist attitudes. Are you not willing to do that? We all are. We don't want to. That's just not loving. It's pride-filled. It's blasphemous because it's an assault against God's beautiful design in variety. Racism is a terrible sin, and I don't know of a Christian who isn't willing to do this. Salvation Army seems to think we need to start teaching this to all of our people because white donors need to offer a sincere apology for their racism. Whew. One wonders how that's going to do for their bell-ringing efforts this Christmas. Story number two, the Kyle Rittenhouse response. The young man was found not guilty on five charges brought against him for a shooting that took place. Yeah, I'm getting my Wisconsin towns confused. Waukesha, that's where the, what are they calling that? It's not a guy who drove a speeding vehicle through a crowd of people. I think they're calling it vehicle violence, something like that, you know, like gun violence, because it's not people who kill people. It's the gun that kills people. I think the good news out of this, and at least the world is being consistent, apparently in Waukesha, they have petitioned Madison, which is the capital of Wisconsin, to pass some stricter SUV laws. Make sure that truck violence doesn't continue happening. Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty, and the world, many people, not all, many people thought, okay, that appears to have been justice. A lot of people are going, nope, that's just another demonstration of a white system designed to protect white people. Where does that response come from? Critical race theory. Catholic University painting, specifically the Catholic University of America, has put up a painting, I think, in their law school. If you've ever been to the Vatican, you have seen perhaps what I believe to be the most gorgeous sculpture on the planet. I think it far surpasses the David statue, which I think is totally inappropriate and very Platonic in its presentation of the naked king of Israel. The Pietà in the Vatican, you walk in, room to the right is this glorious, this marble statue of Mary holding the dead body of Jesus Christ. Now, we know that it's very Roman Catholic in its inclination, but you can't help but marvel at the beauty of it. The Catholic University did a painting, but it wasn't Jesus in the arms of Mary. It was George Floyd.
There's two paintings.
Two of them.
One in the law school, as you said, the other in the churches or the university's church ministry office.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Let's put it in the church ministry office.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Now, the university is saying, no, 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 that's not what it is. Unfortunately, when asked whether the painting is of George Floyd or Jesus Christ, the artist has replied, yes. This Floyd called out for his mother in a viral video that showed him die under a police officer's knee. And so she swapped Jesus for George Floyd. The university, this is just rich. The vice president of communications responded, "The icon Mama is a Pietà depicting Mary and her son Jesus Christ." The statement continued, "These are those who would like to see George Floyd as the male figure in the icon. That is not how we read it." Well, doesn't matter how you read it. That's what the artist intended. Why was it painted and why is it placed in two locations in a Catholic university? Thank you. Thank you. Critical Race Theory. This is Wretched Radio. Here are three words that can strike terror in the heart of any Christian. Open Enrollment Month. The three words that can make you shudder if you have to renew or find a new health insurance program. Did you know every month is an open enrollment month with MediShare? Affordable biblical health care sharing, a huge savings per family, on average $500 per month. You have access to a massive doctor network and MediShare's free 24/7 telehealth option. It shouldn't be a surprise that MediShare's double the customer satisfaction ratings compared with typical health insurance. So instead of experiencing the terrors this year, how's about getting in touch with MediShare? You can do that by calling 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE, or visit MediShare.com/wretched.
2021 has been the best yet at Wretched, and I'm not sure I have enough time to even cover it all, but let's try. This year we rolled out a new curriculum of Wretched Bible Studies. Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3 was released. Wretched Worldview hit the streets. Tom Hammond's newest booklet, Solving the God Puzzle, became available, and Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth was released. And that's just our big resource releases this year. We can't forget about our big move over the summer or the fact that as of today, Wretched Radio can be heard on over 800 radio stations worldwide. Wretched TV can be found on over 135 Christian networks, our YouTube channel, almost 4 million hours watched this year alone, and none of this would be possible without our gospel partners. During this year-end season, would you please prayerfully consider becoming a gospel partner? 2022 promises to be our best yet with our new documentary series, Transformed, set to be released, highlighting the life-changing power of biblical counseling. So visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321 to become a gospel partner today.
You are a pro-life Christian, which is redundant, who happens to be frugal, which is unnecessary to point out because that's what we Christians are, frugal, and you would like to support a life ministry that stewards your money well. Some great news from Preborn Ministries. They have saved 169,000 babies' lives. What is their secret? Ultrasounds. 80% of the time a woman sees her baby, she chooses life. Right now, Preborn has a matching grant. $28 per ultrasound turns into two ultrasounds. Or for $140, you can sponsor five ultrasounds, but because of the match, you'll be saving 10 babies. The ideal time for you to support a life ministry who's going to steward your money well. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, #250, keyword baby, or visit preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 270 AD. A wealthy young man named Antony gives away his possessions and begins life as a hermit. Disciples follow his example, and the first monastic movement began.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
You be the judge.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
This is Wretched Radio. Prepare to play one of America's fastest growing game sensations. Which quote is the most stunning? That's right. Which of the following quotes is the most memorable, the most impactful? Friel, we don't need you to be a thesaurus. That's a speaker's trick, by the way. I don't know if you've ever picked that up. But when a speaker needs a little bit of time to think, they will choose a word. Then they'll repeat it in different ways. So I was driving in my car, my automobile, my transportation device. It just buys some time. I wasn't doing that. I'm just pointing out that's what some speakers do. Which of the following quotes from the big court case that has now been heard at the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, the legislative wing in American politics? This is a big one. Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Mississippi, they passed a law 15 weeks I was going to say deadline, and that's exactly right. The deadline for you to have an abortion, that's the law that was passed. Is it a perfect law? No, it's 15 weeks short. But it's better than 24 weeks or 36 or whatever arbitrary number they choose. If the Supreme Court upholds it and just as is, there are people who are talking about Roe v. Wade getting flip-flopped and this going right back to the states where it belongs for the states to make these decisions. We'll see what they decide. And might I just inject this thought for your consideration? You might want to be thinking about how you're going to react based on their decision. There's basically three positions. They're going to go, we don't like the law. Done. Nope, you can't have that law. And then we are going to be at square. We're going to be right back to 5 years ago. Pick a number where it's like, okay, all right, fine. There could be a mixture where they say we're going to uphold that law. We're going to say that law is legal, but this has nothing to do with Roe v. Wade or Roe v. Casey. Okay, that is a possibility. The other one, of course, is that they uphold it and say thumbs up. Now, which way they go, we will find out in the future. God only knows. Lots of people pontificating based on past comments about the life issue. But I think we would do well to ask ourselves the question, how am I going to do if they decide? I have to confess to you, I think it's going to require us to do some rethinking on the issue. I am still going to be an incrementalist, happy that any advancement is made in life while never being satisfied that there are still babies who can be killed in the womb of their mother. And having said that, I wonder if we have been speaking perhaps as forcefully as we need to on this issue. Because right now, let's be honest, what the incrementalist side of the pro-life movement has been after, the golden apple has been the Supreme Court. And if we can elect enough people who are conservative to appoint conservative judges, then Roe v. Wade is out of here. And I would argue, and I know, believe me, I'm fully aware of Kavanaugh's waffling, certainly John Roberts' waffling, but I don't know that we'll ever do better than today, right now, with the dynamic that's on the court. Most people say it's 6-3, conservative versus liberal. Now, I know I'm not naive. I understand they're not all that conservative, but are we going to ever do better? Are we ever going to get 9 conservative judges? I don't think so. So if this thing gets thumbs downed, I don't know that that's a verb or not. We got to think about how this could possibly change. And I think, brace yourself for this, I think we could learn some lessons from the playbook of the gender-changing, sexuality-redefining movement that has swept the nation. What have they done? They've persuaded people that it's okay to be gay. They have persuaded people that you can identify as any gender that you want to. That's staggering. When I was a kid, neither of those was even remotely socially acceptable. But they have worked very hard at changing people's minds. Now, obviously, they're not changing them in the right direction, but they've changed them. And it seems to me that we should be thinking like that, too. And I will forever be a SLED guy, where we use an acronym to help us to always defend the life issue: size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. Yes, because we can argue the life issue and win every single time. But I just wonder, how are we messaging this? How are we positioning this? How are we being biblically prophetic on this issue? Is it maybe time to consider the language that we're using? I'm just asking some questions here. Now, there's two ways that you could answer the language question and the framing of the argument question. I think one of the directions you could go is making it the this is why the rainbow movement has gained so much ground. You make it a story. It's very personal, very personal. Don't you want that person to be happy? How could you possibly not want them to be who they were made to be? How could you be so cruel? So it's putting a spotlight on the, can't we do better than that? That's one road. Here's another road. And I know that this is a debated subject. We stop calling it abortion. And we call it infanticide. We stop saying that it's the intentional taking of an innocent human life, which is the correct, thorough definition of abortion. And we start utilizing language that the Bible uses. I'm talking about the M word here. That it's perhaps time for us to take a look at our approach to this issue. And my encouragement to you, because I'm certainly not going to be the one who writes the pro-life playbook, but an encouragement today to start thinking about how you're going to react tomorrow when the verdict is handed down. Are we going to learn something from it? Are we going to gain something, glean something from this that can perhaps help in the future? We might want to be having those conversations right now. But that really wasn't the point of this segment.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
Focus, Jimmy. Focus.
You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
Eric, what are we calling this thing? This is which quote is wow. That's it. Because some of them are rotten. Some of them are good. Jimmy, as always, you will represent the tens and tens of people listening to this here wretched radio program.
I'm ready.
You're their federal head.
Okay.
Are you prepared for this responsibility?
Yes.
Quote number one, Clarence Thomas, who has not asked a question during proceedings for 10 years. I'd love to be able to have dinner and ask him why didn't you ask questions for a decade in this one? I'm speculating, but I suspect he's been holding fire because everybody's just gobsmacked. Whoa, wait, what? We didn't even know he could speak. He asked a question, and it's a good one. I don't think it's a great one, but I think it's a good one. Does a mother have a right to ingest drugs and harm a pre-viable baby? Can the state bring child neglect charges against the mother? That's a good question. Because child neglect, we all realize, oh, that's a bad thing. Not allowing your child to live, at the very least, would be neglect. Why do I think that question could be better? Because I think it doesn't address the issue. Then the issue is, what is it? Because this is the debate. It assumes that a pre-viable baby is an innocent human being. And that's why I think that particular question falls. It's good. falls short. That's quote number one, Jimmy. The folks who are arguing the case to defend the Roe v. Wade view said, quote, "That's not what this case is about, but a woman has a right to make choices about her body." And see, that's why she was able to get away with that defense, because the question wasn't as airtight as it should be. I think the moral to this story is obvious. Clarence Thomas needs to get a copy of Life is Best available at wretched.org. His questions would be a little bit tighter. Jimmy, two quotes, yes. But because you got lost in the weeds, like the Carpenters, we've only just begun. And Paul Williams, remember Paul Williams actually wrote that?
Really?
How do I know this? Oh, I just want to curl up in a corner and cry. This is Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. The Book of Numbers tells the story of Israel's wandering in the desert for 40 years. The journey from Egypt to Canaan should have only taken 11 days, but Israel's grumbling and disobedience angered God, and none of the Israelites were allowed to enter the Promised Land. But God remained faithful and led their children into their inheritance. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Focus, Friel. I mean it. Focus.
You be the judge.
Well, we don't have time for that. This is Wretched Radio. Let's get to the many quotes that have been heard at the big Supreme Court hearing. Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Don't ask me when we started calling the taking of an innocent human life women's health. Oh, yeah, I know when we decided we're not going to be intellectually honest and tell you. We just want to kill it because it's a life. And we all know that because dead things don't grow. And what's in the womb, it is growing immediately. That means we all get it. We are intentionally taking a life. Now, whether you think that life has value, that is a separate question. But to argue that it's not an actual life is intellectually dishonest. And all of the chin boogie and all of the new defining of words and all the fog, there is so much fog surrounding the pro-life debate.
How much fog
is it?
Thank
you, Jimmy. Thank you. Wow, that was a little too enthusiastic. There's more fog surrounding this issue than the stage of a mega church worship service on Sunday morning. That's a lot of fog. Would they please be honest? Look, we want to kill it. Whatever it is, we want to end it. That's our position. Just isn't the way that we talk. Wondering if we should, by the way, and incidentally, perhaps one of the quotes in our competition would be from the Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. He said this, and he was at some prayer meeting. Now, I think too many politicians are afraid to say it, but I'll say it. Abortion is barbaric. Abortion is evil. It's probably the greatest evil of our day. Every single day in America, thousands of children lose their God-given inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No, thousands of women are getting health care. Thank you, sir, for your stance on that. And by the way, thank you to the governor of Mississippi, who's in the center of this little Supreme Court Lollapalooza. He was being interviewed on a morning program and being challenged. Hey, you say that right to life is an important thing. So why don't you want to have a vaccine mandate? In an interview with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, the governor was asked how he reconciles the opposition to vaccine mandates with his support for the controversial Mississippi law restricting abortion after 15 weeks of gestation. He responded that those comparing vaccine mandates and abortion laws like Mississippi's, quote, absolutely ignore the fact that in getting an abortion, there's an actual killing of an innocent unborn child that is in the womb. Thank you. There's a little bit of a difference. Here's what we know about babies that are 15 weeks, which I'm not a fan of arguing for 15 weeks. It's just the incremental advancement that seems to be at least achievable right now. He said, we know that they have a heartbeat. We know that those babies actually can open and close their hands, which, by the way, is not the pro-life argument. He's making a different point, however. The pro-life argument is whether its hands operate, whether its heart is beating, it's a human being. It's an image bearer of God. We don't trespass and violate God's command to not murder. And that's the pro-life position. The governor is trying to make another point that what is done to a 15-week-old is different than a vaccination. We know that they have developing lungs, and we know that those babies, 15 weeks, can feel pain. And again, whether they can feel pain or not is irrelevant. That's not what a vaccine is. The vaccine, whether you like it or not, the intention of it is to save life. That's not the intention of abortion, needless to say. Jimmy,
yes.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Would you be shocked if I told you I'm all out of order here?
No, I would not be.
I have no idea. You're going to have to keep track of which quote was the most whatever this is that we're doing.
Okay.
Here's a quote. Did we ever get to Justice Alito and John Roberts?
No, I don't think so. No.
Focus, Friel, focus. They questioned the viability line, with Alito referencing those who have said the line really doesn't make any sense. I agree, but a pro-abort would see that different than a pro-lifer. We see it as arbitrary. We don't think that it is something that determines the value of what is in the womb, whether it's viable or not. It's what it is. That's always the big question. John Roberts, why is 15 weeks not enough time? Number six. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, one of the conservatives, suggested the court should leave the issue of abortion to Congress and the states and, quote, return to the position of neutrality. Well, I think that they should take a look at laws when the cases are brought before them. That's their purpose. But this should be a state's right issue, not a federal mandate. And the Supreme Court is not the body that can make that mandate. That's supposed to come from the legislative branch. Quote number seven. Justice Elena Kagan said the court doesn't easily overturn past decisions. That prevents people from thinking this court is a political institution. No. No. Wait, what are you suggesting? That it might be a political institution and we don't want people to have that perception? Then stop being a political institution. Are you kidding me? What is her argument? From a logical fallacy standpoint, can you hear the fallacy in her argument? She said this. This is Sotomayor. Sotomayor. She said this, and you'll hear the same fallacy. Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts? If people actually believe that it's all political, how will we survive? How will the court survive? What is that? Hello, Mott and Bailey. You remember the Mott and Bailey. Say something that's agreeable. Hey, we don't want the Supreme Court to be perceived as a political institution. That's the safe position. We'd all agree with that. But then when they hit the Bailey, when they hit the streets, that translates into women should have the right to kill their babies no matter how old or young it is, maybe even outside of the womb. And then you say, wait, whoa. The fact is that's a life in there. That's an innocent human being. Do you want the Supreme Court to be besmirched? Oh, Mott and Bailey, the old switcheroo. It's begging the question. And it is a classic argument that is being used so often these days. Give the safe position, give a ridiculous application, and then when anybody questions the application, you run back to the presupposition for your defense. Pathetic from a Supreme Court judge. Quote number 9, 10, 11, I don't know what we're on, Jimmy. This is from Brett Kavanaugh. The conclusion that abortion is a constitutional right has no basis in text, structure, history, or tradition. Thank you for that. Because that's the argument. I'm telling you, this word game that they have been playing, sensationally, by the way, has really been impactful. We now talk about abortion like it's a constitutional right. It started out, everybody knew that this was a nasty procedure. And then because of Roe v. Wade, we started saying, well, a woman has a right to abortion. Uh-oh, we don't like the word abortion. She has the right to choice. Now we're at the Constitution gives you the right to choose. How did that happen? It's a war of words. And I'll be honest with you. We don't want to play that game, but we might want to learn from that game because we're truth people. We don't do chin boogie. We're not the smoke and mirrors orators. We are the truth tellers. So I don't think we want to start playing the same game and pull the same Mott and Baileys, but I think we need to identify them and call them out when they happen. All righty, Jimmy.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
So, which one of these quotes?
It's the most memorable.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, I think a couple of them. I can't pick two.
One.
Okay, the last one. The one that specifically mentions that abortion is not a constitutional right.
Oh.
That's not the one you wanted me to pick. I didn't get the memo. I'm sorry.
We should have done some prep. I think the one that struck me was the governor of Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
Being willing to go, hey, look, this is a barbaric practice. This is evil. And no matter what the outcome of this particular decision is, we might do well to take a look at how we are discussing this issue, arguing this issue, presenting this issue to start persuading people that abortion is abhorrent and it needs to be stopped totally, completely, not viability, not number of weeks or heartbeat or the ability to squeeze their hand. No, because it is a whole innocent human being made in the image of God himself. This is Wretched Radio.
Well, it seems like everywhere you look, you find a survey about something these days. And of course, Wretched, we didn't want to miss out on this trend, so we conducted our own survey. Actually, I just asked a couple of people across the hall, but here are the results. When asked, what's your favorite part of Christmas? 100% of respondents said, celebrating the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Without Christ, there's no reason for Christmas. Without Christ, there's no reason for Wretched. We realize we can't do any of this without you. It wouldn't be possible to produce the content and resources that we do without the support of our gospel partners. During this time of year where we should all reflect on the true meaning of Christmas, would you prayerfully consider becoming a gospel partner and help us to continue reaching the lost all over the world? Just visit wretched.org/donate. That's wretched.org/donate, or text the word wretched to the number 44321.
And now a message from our dear brother Paul Marty of the Tomorrow Club's Kids Bible Clubs all throughout Eastern Europe. Just in case it isn't difficult enough to do ministry in poor Eastern Europe.
2020 has been a challenging year for all of us, and especially hard for the vulnerable kids and families the Tomorrow Club serve. But support from the Wretched audience has enabled us to continue to bring a message of hope, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to the forsaken places we serve. Thank you so much.
If you are a Tomorrow Club supporter, I echo his gratitude. If you are not, would you please consider becoming a Tomorrow Club supporter? You can sponsor your own kids club in Eastern Europe so efficiently. Just $30 per month to disciple 30 kids. Learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today. Hey, I don't know if you've noticed, but Wretched.org earlier this year got a facelift, and you should go take a gander at all of the changes. You'll still find full-length Wretched TV and Wretched Radio episodes, but here's something new. You can now watch the entire Wretched Radio episodes from the Daily Radio Show post. You can listen and now watch the entire show. And that's not the only change you'll notice at Wretched.org, so go check it out as you get some time. And we want to take just a moment to thank our gospel partners for making it happen. Running a website takes a lot of time, effort, and resources, but changing a website can sometimes take even more. And so we're grateful for all of our gospel partners. So when you visit Wretched.org, take a peek at our donate page and find out how you can become an ongoing monthly Wretched Gospel partner too. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Revelation. God has revealed himself through many means, including the conscience. God has given each person a conscience so that they can understand his moral standard and their failure to keep that standard. While the conscience can be deadened and twisted by sin, every human being has an innate knowledge of God's law.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go back in time. Eventually, this is Wretched Radio. Before I take you back in time to learn a historical lesson that has contemporary application, especially these days if you happen to be in Liverpool, but perhaps anywhere on the globe, would like to share some very good news with you. This just does my cold conservative heart good. I received a picture. Jimmy, maybe you can see it. I don't know if you can actually read it. Why? Because it's actually in Spanish. The book is 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. It was translated by Stephen Kelly Mowry, Baptist missionaries to Spain since 1987. Well done, you two. Talk about faithfulness. They contacted us and said, we'd like to distribute this, but because with the printing and the shipping and, well, and you know, these days with the shipping lines and, oh, the delivery mechanisms, how shouldn't our president be working on it to fix it rather than just bellyaching about it? I'm just saying, wouldn't that be
That's a good idea.
But we're not political commentators here. In Spain, they asked, can we print this booklet so that they can just print it there? So they had to translate it first. Well, it's done. It's been printed and it is now being distributed in Spain. 13 reasons why you should not kill yourself and 13 reasons why you should live. How encouraging is that? Another piece of good news, perhaps for you before we go back in time, would be considering the day that it is. It's open enrollment time for insurance. And you say, no, it's not. That's November. That's the only time that I can get insurance or change insurance policies. The month is November. Not with MediShare. Every month is open enrollment month. That means you can start with them anytime. And I would encourage you to do that now. They are waiving the application fee, which I think is $175. It's not a ridiculous fee, but it's still $175. Blotto, and don't forget, families tend to save on average $500 per month. Is it right for your family? Visit MediShare.com/wretched. MediShare.com/wretched. Check it out and perhaps be introduced to a great biblical alternative. It's affordable, biblical, health sharing, MediShare, MediShare.com/wretched. Open enrollment month is now. Let's go back in time, shall we? Wait a second. That's the second time I hit the harp gliss. Does that mean we came back in time now? Did I goof that up?
I think we went back even farther than you intended.
Then let me just adjust the clock a little bit here. Isn't it funny with all those movies where you go back to the future and all that? You just have to think for a second. Well, how could that work? And the answer is it can't. I mean, it'd have to be like another universe. And what second would every universe be on? That sec or just when you enter it. It gets created. It's just dopey. Nevertheless, we're going to Michael J. Fox and go back in time. Why? There was a bombing in Liverpool, and the fellow who did it claimed to be a Christian. Uh-oh. That's certainly a problem, because we don't hear these stories very often, do we, when it comes to mass shootings, when it comes to bombings and terror attacks? Usually the religion that is invoked is not Christian. In this instance, it is. November 14th, a man detonated an improvised explosive device near the main entrance at the Liverpool Women's Hospital in England. He's the only one who died. He arrived in the UK in 2014. He then, shortly thereafter, converted from Islam to Christianity. In 2015, he was baptized. 2017, confirmed at the Liverpool Cathedral, who claims to have a pretty stringent standard to make sure that they don't have people who pretend to be Christians who are actually Muslims, because they think they'll get better treatment by the government. This has happening a lot. And now people are going, whoa, wait a second, what's the deal? It's usually exclusively Muslims who are blowing up women's hospitals. Is this guy a Christian? I think we know the answer to that is no, he was not, because a genuine born-again Christian doesn't detonate an explosive with the intention of murdering people. Now, in jihad, that's perfectly acceptable. In fact, quite commendable. So what was this guy? Because you heard the timeline. So for give or take 3 years, he was pretending to be a Christian. So what do we do with that? Let's go back in time, shall we? History offers us an especially applicable example. In 1492, Granada, the final Muslim bastion of Spain, was reconquered. Its Muslims were initially granted lenient terms, including the right to travel abroad and practice Islam freely. But guess what? They didn't quite follow the rules. Knock me over with an Islamic feather. Whenever the opportunity arose, they launched many hard-to-quell uprisings, several involving the stoning, dismembering, beheading, impaling, and burning alive of Christians, and regularly colluded with foreign Muslim powers, the Ottoman Turks, in an effort to subvert Spain back to Islam. So they tried to coexist with the religion of peace, and they didn't play well. No, not all of them, but it was a big problem. The Spanish crown eventually issued an edict that Muslims either had to convert to Christianity, that's never a good idea, and therefore slough off their jihadist animus or quit the peninsula. So you either become a Christian or you skedaddle. In response, the entire population of Granada, hundreds of thousands of Muslims, openly embraced Christianity. Oh, you mean what that guy did has happened before? Yeah, and history tells us what that looked like and how it worked out. They openly embraced Christianity but remained crypto-Muslims. In other words, we do our five pillars behind closed doors, act like Christians when they're watching us. Publicly, they went to church, they baptized their children. And by the way, it's not a violation of their religion, because if you're doing it for the cause, you can sin. You don't have to be consistent. You can be blasphemous. You can do anything you want to under the umbrella of jihad, advancing the cause of the kingdom of Allah. They went to church, baptized their kids. At home, they recited the Quran and preached undying hate for the infidel and their obligation to resubjugate Spain to Islam. And all this deception was legitimized by the fatwas of leading Islamic clerics. You got a fatwa? Do what you need to do. One historian explains the great length those Moriscos, that's Muslim converts to Christianity who were still Islamic or Moorish. This is how the extent that they would go to deceive people. For a Morisco to pass as a good Christian took more than a simple statement to that effect. It required a sustained performance involving hundreds of individual statements and actions of different types, many of which might have little to do with expressions of belief or ritual per se. Tachyon dissimulation was an institutionalized practice in Morisco communities that involved regular patterns of behavior passed on from one generation to the next. So they faked it. They were lying. They weren't Christians. They were Muslims with a fatwa and an agenda. A frustrated Spaniard remarked in the 17th century, quote, "They could feign any religion outwardly and without sinning as long as they kept their hearts nevertheless devoted to their false impostor of a prophet. We saw so many of them who died while worshiping the cross and speaking well of our Catholic religion, yet who were inwardly excellent Muslims." What do we do with the guy in Liverpool? That. And even if that wasn't taking place and he thought he was a Christian, he wasn't. Because remember, Christians don't blow up people. Generation after generation of Muslims pretended to be and lived as model Christians in Spain, even as they had nothing but hatred for Christianity and Christians, and all to remain and eventually reconquer Spain for Islam. This is not the only time in history we've seen this. 2013. Oh, wait a second. In 2013... I had to get us up to speed. 2013, an assassination plot against a Christian pastor in Turkey was exposed. 14 Muslim suspects, including at least three women, were arrested. According to the pastor, two of them attended our church for over a year, and they were like family. One was even baptized. These people had infiltrated our church and collected information about me, my family, and the church, and were preparing an attack against us. Do we need any more history to have some clarity about what happened in Liverpool when a supposed Christian who used to be a Muslim, but most likely still was, blew up, or at least attempted to blow up innocent people? No. I think we got that. Maybe one other lesson. And wow, am I glad. Okay, I got to wait a few seconds here, Jimmy. The show is almost over because what I'm going to say is really going to get up somebody's nose. See, we see the problem with forcing people to act like Christians when they're not. Which is maybe why we shouldn't be forcing corporations to have their employees say Merry Christmas when they don't believe it. Oh, look at the time. Until tomorrow. Go serve your king.